great to see all of you here. Glad for the opportunity to think about the recitation of Kaddish as a gendered experience, and to think that through with you for the next hour. I have a whole bunch of sources here, many more than we'll really be able to look at in an hour. But we will look selectively at them, and you're welcome to them. I believe it. I apologize because I think that some of the page numbers are off on the sources that come from this book, Kaddish Women's Voices. So if you want to reuse any of this, just double check the page numbers. But other than that, we're good. Hey, Dahlia. There's plenty more chairs. We really had no idea how many people were coming, so just Lou, Cornel, hi. And yeah, and there are also plenty of these. So, I have a bunch of sources, and I'm eager to hear from you because you experience this, day in, day out on the ground. We certainly know the gendered nature of Kaddish. The Yiddish term Kaddishel only refers to a boy. The son is, traditionally, when a son was born, parents could breathe easy that they had their Kaddishel. So it's been a kind of fraught journey for women who've taken on the obligation of saying Kaddish. The first text I assume that many of you are familiar with, but it's given, as I was preparing for this and reading so many texts by women, I think it's become the Ur text about women in Kaddish, because people refer back to this and then move on from it. This, of course, I'm referring to Henrietta Zold's beautiful letter from 1916, where she thanks her friend Chaim Peretz, who offers to say Kaddish for her when her mother dies. And just to point out, I think that just to point out a few points of this letter, in case you're not familiar with it, we know that Henrietta Zold was such a learned, Jewishly learned woman, probably the most Jewishly learned woman in America, at the time. And so she knows from where she speaks. In the first paragraph, she says, "I can't even thank you." And of course, we read that and we hear underneath that, it's like, right, you can't thank someone for doing a mitzvah. So she gets that. And she declines his offer. You see the very end of the second paragraph is really, I think, the critical sentence there. "The Kaddish means to me that the survivor publicly and markedly manifests his wish and intention to assume the relation to the Jewish community which his parents had, and so that the chain of tradition remains unbroken from generation to generation, each adding its own link. You can do that for the generations of your family. I must do that for the generations of my family." And then in the last paragraph, "She was one of eight daughters. There was no son." She clearly, she doesn't say it the Feirush, but she basically says, "I already said Kaddish when my father died, so why would I not say Kaddish now when my mother died?" And so, beautiful letter, as I say, that's often quoted. There are also kind of testimonies from famous or prototypical American feminists. Bella Abzug said Kaddish for her father at the age of 13 in 1933. There were no sons in the family. She went every day. She said, "No one stopped me. I don't know. I just went." Letty Cotton Progerbin, whom you'll hear from later this evening. She writes about this in her book, Deborah Gold and Me, at the age of 15. She was not allowed to say Kaddish when her mother died, and this kind of catalyzed a alienation from Judaism that she only then was able to come back to in a different way as an adult. And it often is a symbol of sort of women taking their place in the Jewish community by taking on this obligation that isn't theirs, so that was not traditionally theirs to take on. So I thought it would be interesting for us to look at. I started here with two excerpts from some of the more recent and well-known male memoirs of saying Kaddish. So I have something here from Ari Goldman's Living a Year of Kaddish, and then from Leon Wieseltier's Kaddish. So if you look at the first, I have the Goldman piece here. What you see, and again, you'll read these through more at your leisure, but he has a whole page here, and it's really reflective of the book as a whole, where he really writes about what it meant to grieve for his parents, and that he talks about how his whole relationship to his father really revolved around going to shul with his father, learning, feeling comfortable in shul, or putting on tefillin as his father did. His father encouraged him to be a shliach tzibur. All of these things. So when you read this, and then you look at the last paragraph, so by the time my father died, I was yet again a consistent daily worshiper, although not a daily synagogue goer. My prayers were said at home. So this was after his mother died, and he started saying Kaddish, and then his son was bar mitzvah, and he thought he better be a role model for his son, so he sort of should get in the habit again for his son, so that here, and then the last line, but returning to synagogue came naturally, as long as I could get out of bed in the mornings. Okay, so there's no gender angst here. It's very gendered, right? But he's not tied up in knots in himself in figuring out, what should I do? Should I say? Shouldn't I say? Is it the right thing to do? And similarly, if you look at the Wieseltier piece, I don't know, how many of you have read that book? Read parts of it? Parts of it?
Pages in.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay. So then you can understand why it was... You know, right. It was kind of hard for me to find an excerpt because it's kind of random stream of consciousness and it goes on and on. But as you also know, if you try, he's a beautiful, elegant writer. Did you want to say something about him?
I just remember when I read it.
Yeah. Yeah, it came out in 98. So if you will recall, and I have a few excerpts here, his angst over saying Kaddish is spiritual, it's theological, it's existential, and he has plenty of angst, right? Belief doesn't come easily to him, and he wants to grapple with it, and of course he goes through a whole history of Kaddish, and he quotes a lot of the traditional sources on Kaddish. But that's kind of what I have here. He's worried if he doesn't feel comfortable in shul. He worries if it's too sociable in shul. He won't really be able to pray well enough if it's too sociable. He worries when he's leading the prayers. How can he lead if he doesn't believe it? I must be spiritually efficient, he says. On and on and on. But there's nothing fraught about him going into the synagogue to say Kaddish. As a man, he simply takes his rightful place and slips right in, and nobody really, all of that angst is, in his interior life, right? So I did on the second page, I did. He has one section about women and Kaddish. And I thought it'd be interesting for us to read this together. Sorry for that first few lines. It's a little bit hard to read. I'll just read that, those sentences. In Manhattan on Friday evening, there are only a few men in shul. I'm surrounded by a soul-crushing banter, and I don't have the patience for it. Sorry.
Does he mean the prayers are soul crushing?
No, I think the people talking in shul. Yeah, it's the people talking in shul. Because he, sometimes the shul is Judaism's last bulwark against religion. Yes, isn't it? I think any rabbi could identify. I say my Kaddish and run. On Saturday morning, things get worse. Not wanting more of the same, I head a few blocks north to an egalitarian congregation where I usually run into friends. I arrive early. At the appropriate point in the morning service, I rise to say Kaddish. Foolish me, there is no Kaddish. The progressive men and women of this congregation have improved the liturgy by leaving this Kaddish out. Okay, so he's dripping with sarcasm already. So brace yourselves. I hastened to check with the man that the Kaddish that appears later in the service has also not been expunged. He seems a little annoyed by my inquiry, but he assures me that my moment will come a little while later. Okay, so now he has something not very positive to say about whoever's giving the sermon, presumably the rabbi, but he doesn't actually identify him as the rabbi. And then if you go down to the kind of last third of that section, but what I really want to know is this. On what ground precisely was that Kaddish eliminated? Surely not on the grounds of egalitarianism. I agree that Jewish women should be legally and ritually enfranchised by their religion, and it is only a matter of time, I think, before they find satisfaction. But why does tampering with the misogynistic elements of the tradition justify tampering with the other elements of the tradition? Why is egalitarianism so often accompanied by a general slackening? And why are the good women of this congregation not embarrassed by the relaxed standards by which they have gained their admission? Still, I have a Kaddish to say, so I stick it out. The rest of the service is not much more than the religion of singing, a pseudo-Hasidic hootenanny. I can't wait to plead for my father and leave. If I must be alienated, I prefer to be alienated from the real thing.
Who the hell really feels about this
guy? Oh, yeah. If you read him, you know what he thinks about everything.
Is this a conservative synagogue?
I assume so.
I assume. Probably, as I'm thinking on the Upper West Side, probably my synagogue.
There is one thing that occurs to me, though. When I went through the process of mourning for my mother, particularly like the first month, when I just really couldn't even begin to process every tiny little thing could set me off. I was irritable beyond belief. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if in some way, like, he's now, in retrospect, projecting that onto the, but I wonder if that isn't, like, what was going on for him at this moment, both in the, you know, in the, you know, where he's, like, the banter was just getting to me. Like, I couldn't see. And there were moments all the way through that process where he's just like, folks, I like just like don't want to deal with your narshkite. My mom died. Like,
right.
I have no time for
that's really
your petty stuff.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's part of what was going on for him.
That's
but
great.
Then in retrospect, he's got to make it into something.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That's good. Yeah.
He was upset that he missed out on a cottage.
Right. And that so too, when you're saying cottage.
He wants something authentic.
Right.
But in his mind.
Both authentic and like, when you're saying cottage, that's what you're there for.
Well, That goes to your point. You know, in contrast to, you know, for men to walk in and to say Kaddish is a right.
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 It's
total privilege.
Yep.
And so that privilege was denied him in a way that he never had experienced before.
Right.
It never had been that, you know. So then, and that's where he spins it into egalitarianism.
And he spins it into gender.
He spins it into gender.
Right.
Because, like, oh, they're so egalitarian. And suddenly my privilege has been compromised.
Right. Whereas he could have spun it a different way.
Exactly.
Could have said different shuls, different minhagim.
Right. All of a sudden it becomes a gender issue.
He could have been self-aware just about being annoyed.
Right.
And shouldn't he be familiar, since he says he normally runs into friends at that shul? So shouldn't he be somewhat familiar with... Well, maybe he's been there before.
And to the gendered point, mm-hmm. he has the option of being alienated from the authentic, where
That's right.
Presumably would not, or certainly not in the same way.
Right.
He has the presumption of being alienated from the authentic.
Yeah, right.
or the certainty in many cases of the alienated. Yeah. Okay, just one more paragraph on this, where he goes into a whole history of women saying Kaddish and various tshuvot about women saying Kaddish. But I just have this, and again, the page numbers are not correct here. But so someone want to read the right-hand column, which is a lot gentler.
May a woman say Kaddish? It's a controversial question. It sounds to some like a feminist provocation. But ask the question differently. May a daughter say Kaddish? Suddenly the controversy disappears, at least for me. If you deny the Kaddish to a daughter, then you do not understand the Kaddish. The Kaddish is not an obligation of gender. It is an obligation of descent. This is not about men. This is about sons. This is not about women. This is about daughters.
Nice. And skip the paragraph and then the last...
In Shula, New York, a woman comes to say Kaddish. I see her every time I'm here. She enters quietly and glides swiftly into the women's section, which is behind a wall of glass. I wonder if she can hear the prayers. Her face shows awkwardness and determination. She's not unwelcome here, but her presence is a challenge, an act of contention. Still, she's not come here to make a criticism. She's come here to mourn a parent and to pray. I admire her. I'm also afraid that she will catch me looking at her and misunderstand me. She is here to repeal a certain kind of male regard.
Okay. So, again, there, the male gaze is still, here. He has the privilege to admire what's going on the other side of the mechitza. In all that I've read of women's memoirs of Kaddish, I've never heard a woman admiring the men who are saying Kaddish, right? So you see that even when it's happening and when it's, there aren't the horror stories of getting thrown at, and there, I have a couple of those horror stories here, because I couldn't resist.
If you ask, do only exactly what the men are doing, and it's a feminist provocation.
Right.
You're only asking to do exactly what they're doing, and it's a feminist provocation.
Right. Even
in your own section. Like, I'm not even, it's not like I walked in and wanted to say Kaddish standing next to you. I walked in and I went to the women's section, behind the glass,
and you
stood up by myself.
You haven't bothered to check if I can, you don't know if I can hear, you haven't bothered to check if I can hear.
Right, you ever asked
like, if you care about that, ask me.
Right, it's framing though, I think it's the right thing. In other words, when you talk about it as a daughter, or, instead of a, reminded me right away of the images we saw with the three kidnapped and killed. You know, who was the mom that she stood up to say Kaddish in this funeral in Israel?
And nobody.
It was this. That scene of, you're not looking at a woman room, you're looking at a mother saying Kaddish.
Right.
But this woman behind the pizza glass, whatever, in that shul, that was not courage to stand up. I don't know. I mean, he was looking at her, not because he didn't think she should, but...
No, absolutely. No, no. But, I mean, I think that's part of what Kale's saying, that for a woman to do that, it's an act of... It's courageous, and for, as you know, as you said, for a man to say Kaddish is just... You just do it. Right. It is your. It is a man's right. A man comes in shul, he expects to find his Kaddish there.
No, I had an experience once we talked about... him upset that the first Kaddish, whatever it was. I've had people come to Morning Minyan and get that first Kaddish, then go up to work.
Absolutely. And people, when it's not there, God forbid, it's not there.
Right.
I'm not here to pray. I'm here to say Kaddish and get out.
I often wonder, and I'd be getting more people at the other minyan if I just said, we're going to get at 7:30, say Kaddish, and leave. I might get, you know, minyan more often than not.
So one of the few Reform synagogues to have a daily minyan is Central Synagogue here in New York, and they have a service at 8:00 in the morning for 15 minutes, and people are able to say Kaddish, and so they have this ongoing daily minyan. And other things happen besides just Kaddish, but it's become a really important community.
You're there.
One of the things of it when I was dreaming of that our daily minyan meets always right, you know, sort of on that cusp of Mincha Maariv, and so there's sometimes a year where that becomes really, really, like you can't get out of work early enough to be there. And I'm very lucky that I worked in a place where I could get a Mincha minyan on a daily basis, and then I would go to another synagogue that had always 5:30 Maariv, no matter what time of year it was. But the time of year when it was then too late to say Mincha, Ashrei Kaddish.
Right.
Maariv.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we do.
Yeah, a lot of
shuls. We do a psalm. Yeah. Not always Ashrei, but a psalm, a Kaddish, and when you can only do one or the other.
Right.
Because God forbid you don't get that extra Kaddish.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, picking up on what Aaron was saying a minute ago, has there been anything written about saying Kaddish from the perspective of a mother or a sister? You know, so a relationship outside of
a wife?
Yes, and this book has a lot of, and there's a lot in here as well. I chose not to pull those excerpts because I wanted to focus more on Kaddish without comparing different kinds of Kaddish, and the most common and least fraught is saying Kaddish for a parent. So those are the excerpts that I chose. The one that really has
I'm sorry, Julie, that's how I understood Jody's question.
What?
How did you mean your question?
I meant, from the perspective of a woman who's another relative other than daughter.
I totally misunderstood
your
question. I'm sorry.
So you're just a child, or your sister, or brother, or
I misunderstood the question.
Yeah, that's my question.
I misunderstood it.
There is the one by Joni Nathanson, which is somewhere in here, really has this issue of, go daven in the hall. Because of you, I can't daven. You know, she has a catalog of indignities that she suffered, and starts off by saying that she was in Atlantic City, and she asked the Orthodox rabbi if he knew if there was a minyan for her, and he said no. So he told her to call the conservative rabbi, and
she said the wrong thing. She said, is there a minyan?
I know.
For me?
Right.
Or does not? Just
no, she just should have said, I'm calling for my husband.
Oh.
And then he would have told her all the minyanim in Atlantic City.
But if they don't set up a pizza, then she wouldn't.
Right. So there you see, because as you can see, and she said that the conservative rabbi made a mechitza for her so that she could daven in the synagogue, which is interesting. I wonder if any of you have ever been in that position and what you might have done or not done.
You know,
a lot of the Orthodox women from the synagogue around the corner from me mm-hmm. come to my shul to mm-hmm. say Kaddish. And, you know,
no mechitza. That shul has a balcony.
Asked me
so you're really separate. Uh-huh.
You know,
it's not even.
We use our full sanctuary for daily minyan for reasons that are still lost to me, so it's always.
Plenty of room.
A lot of space so people can really find.
To be separate.
Their yeah.
And we have weird aisles. It's a bit. Okay. They're in the middle.
That's interesting.
We planted a row of trees around the zone.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, our son David's in the corner for the same reason, to be away from your parents.
Right. Everybody should be near me.
You know what it reminds me of when you talked about calling for a husband? Some of us, when we first went out to get our taluses in
yes.
Jerusalem.
And oh, yeah, I remember that.
Sort of our mitzvah boy is just about my height.
Oh, yeah. I remember one of my daughters went through a wanted tzitzis, mm-hmm. and I did the same thing. Mm-hmm. He's about this size. Mm-hmm. Bring my daughter there.
Be the best of my butt to fill in.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just recently
join us. We'll make room for you.
Keep like rotating between everybody. But the day after Passover, I went to a store in Lakewood, which is a really crazy area mm-hmm.
yeah, right
by where Deborah and I live. And a third time I had been there at the store. The first time I laid out that this bag was all I wanted was the tallest bag and the tefillin bag with my daughter's name on it.
Mm-hmm.
First time I asked him, he said fine. Second time, she wasn't with me. He didn't have what she had wanted. But I found something. Third time, she was with me.
Mm-hmm.
Bar Mitzvah was in October. He made us wait a long time in front of other people. Mm-hmm. He said to me, sorry, I just called my rabbi, and he said that because it's going to be used by a woman, I can't sell it to you. Mm-hmm. So we have someone in our shul who's like this with the CEO at the Yeshiva Gedolah. So she called Rabbi Kotler for me. He called me back. Unfortunately, he called the wrong store in Lakewood who said, no, that didn't happen. And then he called me. He's like, they don't have a Yaakov there. I had the wrong store, didn't I? So he did, but before he made any phone calls, he called like the head posek in Lakewood to ask, and the posek said, not a problem. There's no reason why they couldn't sell it to her. So it's
interesting.
That's my sister, like, for
usually, like, money's money, right? Yeah.
But when the year that I was saying Kaddish for my father, I would try to find, like, more liberal Orthodox people, like the guy at Gingerbread House. And I say to him, so where can I do minfa? He's like, well, we don't put up a mechitza.
Mm-hmm.
So that was part of the problem.
That's right.
The guy in the shawarma place would say to me, what do you need to say it for? You're a woman. I'm like, I'm a conservative rabbi. My father died. And he's like, what's that?
Yes. Well, that's when he's not living anymore.
Right. Exactly. Thank you.
That was great. Yeah.
But I can't imagine putting up a mechitza in my conservative synagogue.
Right. I thought that
the only time we do like a Shabbat program with one of the Orthodox synagogues, like on Tisha B'Av, and then mm-hmm. we give them a room, and they do their service, and we have our services in our room, and
right.
you know, we let them
uh-huh.
use the space. But right. you know, anybody wants to go, they could.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, it's interesting.
People come to Minnesota, and they know what they're walking into mm-hmm. In our shul. But we have like families that have like really from families. So at morning minyan, what will happen, the way our room is set up, our chapel is also our library, so people stand at both sections. And so oftentimes, even if there are men in the back section, these from women and from men will stand in the back, won't mm-hmm. come up into the mm-hmm. chapel side,
right.
but they'll stand in the right. back. And even
but
if,
that's their
even if
choice.
It's not,
right.
Like, now, I think the fact that there's like a counter with columns
in their minds, right.
Right.
Right, but you're not changing right. your minhag,
right. Right.
they're accommodating right. to it, which is
we yeah. had a community fly into Ottawa last mm-hmm. year, and someone, one of the Orthodox rabbis was saying Kaddish, and we said, in the morning, we said, all right, well, we'll see, you know, who wants to come down. And we ended up, they ended up with eight, we ended up with eight, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, no one had a minion.
Interesting.
But we were in, essentially, the room where we were eating breakfast, and what ended up, we had the, it was odd, because what ended up happening is the eight Orthodox men stood over here, and the eight conservative Reform men and women stood over here, and we're like a minion in this very strange room with no real mechitza, but clearly delineated by... attitude.
Together, you each
but
felt
we all,
you had a minion.
But they felt, yeah, but we figured together we would uh-huh. run.
Yeah.
We would daven together so you could say Kaddish.
Right. Huh. Yeah. Nice.
Shelly, I'm sorry I missed your introduction, so if this doesn't fit in, but
And I hope I don't have to, like, put out my egalitarian, you know, justification here. But in terms of some of what's known psychologically about bereavement, there is some discussion about male models and female models of, mm-hmm. of grieving. And certainly in the bereavement groups that we offer, it's 90 to 95% women.
Yeah.
And some of the discussions about male models of grieving are about doing things. Mm-hmm. I build something, I make something, and so that... and of course, it's not that it's not men do this and women do this because everybody's got the models.
Right.
But it's interesting that Kaddish works as a doing model. You know, for all that, and you know, you were there was a comment here. He wants his Kaddish. He wants to do that. But in fact, doing is the response to grief, mm-hmm. as opposed to talking about it, thinking about it, being hugged, being comforted, having somebody notice when you cry in the middle of minyan. Mm-hmm. So it's something I've been playing around with, you know,
yeah.
thinking about how that works. Even as, of course, I talk and I use and I did. And encourage even people who aren't coming from religious places, I talk about what Kaddish can be and do for you, but when you're there.
Right.
And when you're doing it, it doesn't do it in theater, which is, of course, the other question I don't think you're touching on, which is the issue that comes up all the time, which is, can I say Kaddish by myself? Or I am saying Kaddish
right.
by myself. I
mm-hmm.
sit in my bedroom and I look out the window mm-hmm. and I say Kaddish.
Great.
And is that doing the same?
Yeah, so we didn't touch on that. That's not how we began. We were talking more about the gender differences between men who, for whom Kaddish is a rite.
That they
are, yes, yes, either way. That women, the very act of saying Kaddish is itself can be a provocation, mm-hmm. is an act of courage, but it isn't just saying Kaddish, and it can never be mm-hmm. in that way. But what you're describing comes up in some of the gendered responses that we see here in some of these memoirs. So if you turn to the memoir called Learning to Live Without by Debbie Jonas. You just need to flip through the pages because I did put page number. This is a memoir by a very from woman, the mother of 9 children and many grandchildren, whose father died of heart attack. So it was sudden. They came back. They just kind of instinctively, as you see in the first paragraph, the rabbi gave her a sidur. It is time to say Kaddish, and lo and behold, she started saying Kaddish and continued to say Kaddish. Okay, but then if you turn to the next page. Look at the paragraph in the middle of the page.
One cold winter morning?
Yeah. Stephanie, can you read that?
One cold winter morning after a snowstorm, there were only 9 men. Phone calls were made, the clock ticked, still only 9. One of the older gentlemen wanted to count me as a 10. There was much discussion as to the propriety of the suggestion. In an Orthodox shul, you might be able to count a sefer Torah or a 12-year-old boy, but not a woman. But I didn't want to be counted. I didn't want it to depend on me. When the 10th man showed up and ended the discussion, I was grateful beyond measure.
So here's an Orthodox woman with 9 children. So as you can imagine, going to say Kaddish must be like a blessed moment of peace and quiet where she actually can think of herself as a daughter grieving for her father instead of all the other stuff she's got to do. And so there's a case where, you know, being behind the mechitza and knowing that no one's going to bother her, that she actually can be invisible, is a blessing for her. And it does speak a little bit to what you're saying.
It can also be more than that. Right, my father-in-law's synagogue was egalitarian, mm-hmm. and my mother-in-law had no problem sitting with him and the kids together, but everybody knew that Dina didn't want to be counted in the minion, that she saw herself as more traditional than that. Though she found herself once in this situation where it was a minion and somebody wanted to say Kaddish, and there she was the 10th person. Unless they could count her, they couldn't do it. And she decided at that point she was willing to be counted, but she couldn't deny them the opportunity to say Kaddish.
Right.
So it was more than just being separated, and it was more than just about getting away from the kids. It was about how she identified herself within the community.
Oh, I think that's certainly true. And part of it is, you know, probably in her case, but certainly in this writer's case, the way in which she was socialized. It never occurred to her for it to be otherwise. And it was only when she was actually confronted with this case of, well, what if I could have been a 10th? And she's like, well, I'm actually really happy that's never going to come up around here.
I also wonder, like to Stephanie's point about doing it, emotionally, I'm not sure if this is gendered or not, you know, but emotionally in these situations, I often find that emotion in the moment takes over. You know, there's the luxury of afterwards being able to sort of philosophically sit and write it all down.
Yes.
But when you're in the moment, if somebody wants to count you, and I would imagine that often it's going to happen, because emotionally you just want to be, if you're that kind of person that wants to be present for them. Right?
Sure. Right.
You know, emotionally all sorts of, you know, it's like it's different, but you know, you're at the graveside, you don't have a minion. What do? You know? There's the emotionally what you do, and then there's the,
you follow the chuva that says you can say God if you just do it aside without a minion.
Right, but in the moment you're not even thinking, you know, I don't know.
Right, but that kind of cuts both ways, because with the doing piece, so a woman who comes to say Kaddish, where she's not counted, is infuriated that she can't do what she came to do. Right? Because some 10th man didn't show up. But this woman's experience is completely different. That is not what she wanted. She didn't want to be counted as the 10th. It probably, she doesn't say it, but it probably would have not felt like an authentic Kaddish to her. Right? Yeah.
You know, so it's 99 years since Andrea is old.
Exactly.
And you read these memoirs of these women, right? And you also understand, you know, our inability to actually hold on to the significance of what Henrietta Szold did, because you get to a point where she says, you know, but I know the day will come when I will be the one in the grave, and these little boys will sit at my feet and stand at the head of my grave, and with their brothers, and say those ancient words. Perhaps my daughters will say Kaddish as well. It will be their choice. And you sort of understand, you know, something about our world. In retrospect, for 100 years of our inability to actually have celebrated in a way that said, this is really significant. So now we look back, it's the Ur text of women saying Kaddish, but we never really internalized it in such a way as a people over 100 years.
We certainly still haven't.
You're absolutely right.
No, Sean,
Sean
is right.
A year ago, renegotiated your contract. And one of the things that ends up coming up is what happens with him when I have to say Kaddish, which thank God I haven't had to do yet, and please God, it should be far in the future, but our kids are still in school, and at home, and still in school, and someone needs to be there to kick them out of bed, and that's my job, and that's been my job because I'm not the congregational rabbi.
Yep.
And that's been my job over... Jesse's 18, so okay, 18 years, you know.
Sing it.
Right? Yep. So that's my job. And I know I watched my friends go through this where she's the one, you know, with a couple, she's the one that gets the kids ready for school and he leaves work first. And now we have to renegotiate the entire family structure so she can go to Kaddish. And For her, it was just Scotch. For me, you know, the idea of where, also, the logistics of where will I go to Minion, because
that's hilarious.
I graduated in 1996, and I have never been in. We have never been in a synagogue. We're uncounted. Sean, that's not against you.
So was that brought up because they were afraid he wouldn't show up?
Well, what, it's not that. I mean, he's not actually, you know, obligated to be at Minion, but his presence is important there. So what's going to happen when Rob Jen's coming, or when Rob Jen's not coming because she's actually going to Beth David, where my shul is, where my office is, because my office is in another synagogue, or to, I don't know, Beth Emeth, because the kids' school will be across the street, or what, you know. And so I'm not even attending my own shul. Where they don't count me anyway. And all of this, and it becomes this huge issue over whose right is it to say Kaddish. Now, no one, not a single person assumes I wouldn't say Kaddish. And all of it, we're working on an assumption that not only is Rav Jen going to say Kaddish, but she's going to go to morning Minyan and evening Minyan, and we're going to have to negotiate it. But now we have to negotiate it.
I would say I'm surprised, but nothing that a lay board would say would surprise me.
You soften it to torture.
There are no limits to what, because there are no limits to what a board can come up with.
Anyway, if I can add on to what my wife just said, sorry.
Because that's never.
My minion is a robust minion. We've always been in good shape, and I have a lot of folks who just pass through, not members, but who stick around for the 11 months, or if they really listen to me, 12, and say Kaddish. Over the 5.5 years that I have been at this shul, all of the men who have come through there, just by basic demeanor and conversation and whatnot, I would have concluded that only one of them had children. Because I remember rousing him one morning, he didn't have his tefillin on. I said, Michael, you got to put your tefillin on. Where are they? He said, I put them on at home every day. I wanted to make sure my kids see me do it. I do it every day, I promise. I let that go. But he was the only one who I would have guessed had children. I've gotten thank you notes from women who have gone through the process for a year. And I have a beautiful letter or note, I don't know, 16 things I learned saying Kaddish, which picks up on what Karen Markowitz-Michaels here says, that everything has, one of the things she says, everything has to shift around. It's not an individual obligation. It's a family obligation. It's what you were just saying.
Right, and it is the wife of a conservative rabbi. I mean, it's exactly this.
But it's a family obligation.
This story where she suddenly has to go say Kaddish. Yeah.
But if someone's out the door in the morning at breakfast time and out the door in the evening at dinner time, whose role it is to get the kids out the door, it shifts. But it's interesting that over the years I've been doing this, I would have only guessed that the women have children at homes.
Don't you have many more men coming to say Kaddish in the morning and more women in the evening?
Yes, the percentage
shifts. So that the percentage is even up more in the evening, but in the morning it's very heavily men. So why aren't the women saying Kaddish in the morning? Because we have we still have that obligation, and it's still gendered.
I think in a way my husband just is a very big planner. I think he actually enjoyed the challenge of trying to plan my travel that year.
Great.
All right, so we get you on the red eye, and then you get to such a day, and then you can go to this shul, and I checked all the different places around, and there means it this time, and there's it that time.
I have too many close friends who've lately lost parents. Thank God I'm not on that boat, but with young children. Mm-hmm. And I have found that difficulty has been equal for the men and women too. And that's why, going back to the piece of finding the woman admirable, I'm in a place where we find it, you know, admirable when they make it, you know, they find it when they can make it once a day. Either the man or the woman, when they make it, because it's just in the professional world and in the these are people who are committed to Kaddish, committed to Minyan, but there are too many things that make it so hard for people that I think that's the piece.
That may very well be true, but I when men, at least so far, Yes. When men and women reflect on St. Kaddish and what it meant to them, women talk about that angst of, and my daughter was pulling at my skirt and I wanted to get out the door and I felt bad leaving my daughter, and what's the where do I need to be, and kind of feeling torn. And you don't hear men reflecting on that kind of not both the logistical pull but also the emotional pull of like, okay, at heart my job is to be with my kids and here I am, you know, being in, you know, with the proverbial daughter tugging at the skirt.
But I think the classic stereotype is that at heart men feel like, you know, men are often told your job is to support your family, right? And your work is what you do on behalf, right? That's, you know, and frankly, you know, and I think a lot of families that still, you know, because of wage gaps and whatever, you know, there were a lot of interesting differences between my husband and myself. We went through this kind of overlapping, only partly because I work in the Jewish world and that made it easier, but also because I work for a tenth of what he makes, you know, an eighth of what he makes, or what he was making at that time. His job was what paid our mortgage and what paid the day school tuition and what went into the college fund and is the retirement money. And he feels that all the time. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell him you can't feel that when I, you know, have, you know, used that as a luxury to go into a career that gives me a lot of satisfaction and very little money.
I can understand that.
I can't tell him that's an illegitimate thing to feel, but that meant that he made his effort to go once a day, and I made the effort to go all three services, mm-hmm. which was sometimes, you know, twice a day, sometimes three times a day.
Right. Yeah, my reflection was not a judgment, but I'm trying to,
but that's another
to
aspect of
reflect
how
the reality of Absolutely. How men and women experience yeah. that.
Yes. The difference can often be exacerbated. I had one woman who was saying Kaddish for her father for a full year. During that year, her daughter was diagnosed with OCD. And, you know, what do we, I don't know if that's chemical, wiring, or whatever, but, you know, as parents, when that happens, we also take that, what did we do? What should we have done differently? Mm-hmm. And so she was asking that question while mourning for her father, with whom she was very close, and while her daughter was in a significant spiral from, you know, which there's been recovery, but you know, finding your way through that is very difficult.
Right. For sure. I'd like us to focus on the reflection by Nessa Rappaport. Because I'm mindful of the time.
We're not.
Yeah. in which she talks about St. Kaddish. So. I don't know. Want to start?
In the beginning, your fluidity in your tradition, your adeptness, gone. I shall not forget Jay, who handed me his siddur open in Kaddish on the first morning after Shiva as I entered the Ezrat Nashim, the woman's side of the modern Orthodox synagogue, that became my Kaddish minyan, shocked both by death and by my plummeting awareness that there was no egalitarian mincha ma'ariv near my home or my job, or E, who interrupted her ardent prayer to show me the place. 11 months later, we women are a fierce sisterhood, waning and waxing like that lunar calendar. When one of us completes her Kaddish, we are diminished as a community and yet relieved for her. No more panting up the stairs to get to shul in time for the first Kaddish. No more solidarity in our delight at being acknowledged in subtle ways as contributors to the culture of the shul, even if not citizens. Or more rarely, slighted by those who race through Kaddish on the other side of the mechitza as if we were not there. Or ask in a strident voice, is anyone a chiyuv? Does anyone have a mourner's obligation to lead the minyan? To the resounding no chiyuv as we stand there, mute. If we lower our voices in humility when we claim in the grace after meals that from youth to old age we have never seen a righteous person forsaken and his descendants begging for bread, can you not lower your voice when asking such a question? Or when every morning to start the praying day you bless the Lord who did not make me a woman, as if we, a hearing, listening community, were not standing in the same sacred space, only a barrier away.
So, I'd like to read a little more, and then we'll talk about it. So maybe someone else want to take over, continue with like two paragraphs down. I count
the saying of Kaddish as among the highest privileges of my life. I entered a world and emerged a different person. Time unfurled and my father's glittering facets turned toward me and away. The clutch of turbulent perfectionism he bequeathed to me, relenting in compassion for all he did and could not do for my own unfinished self. In the beginning, Kaddish was like the frame that descends to right the bowling pins that have been moved into patternless anarchy. The frame lowers painstakingly, setting in place, but only for an instant. It could never be in order.
So skip to the men on the other side did not see me.
The men on the other side do not see me, literally, metaphorically, and thus cannot acknowledge aloud, as they do for male mourners, that I am present because of my father's remembered absence. But the resident scholar, a woman, knows why I am here. And when I cannot recall, it has been a year.
Because this is, she's coming back for the Earth site now.
Yeah. Whether the Kaddish de Rabbanan that comes between Mincha and Mariv on this Friday is the conclusion of Mincha, and thus my responsibility to say aloud, or the prelude to the Mariv after the Earth site, she does not say, I'll go ask the rabbi. She tells me immediately the answer. Because she knows the answer. Which is a transformative change in the architectonics of... of communal prayer. Praise through the pain of exclusion, I am suffused with thanksgiving. Beyond the boundaries of this Jewish world are women rabbis. Now, new on my side of the mechitza is a religious authority.
Okay, skip and then skip one paragraph and then go to when you do not count.
When you do not count, you cannot simply join the impromptu morning minion in the El Al lounge at JFK after your midnight plane was delayed until dawn. You can run up Broadway to your cherished Shabbat tefillah, lungs sliced by brittle winter air, to find that there are 9 women but only 6 men. You make 10, but not the right 10. And so, again, despite your being on time, despite your commitment to honor your father in this time-stringent way, there is no initial Kaddish for you. Sisters in Kaddish, here is a hard truth. There is an inescapable line between a woman who is not counted in a minyan and a woman who is an aguna, a line that no welcoming words from the bima and no woman scholar in residence can erase. When a man on the other side of the mechitza forgets to pass over the tzedakah dish during the repetition of the amidah, the primordial shiver that afflicts me is not only about the deletion of the woman who are saying Kaddish, it is the accurate perception of our elemental powerlessness in Jewish law.
So strong words.
Yeah, but again.
What do you think?
Well, maybe it's a long term, nothing. But again, it's the issue is why do you continually put yourself in that situation in which you are reminded of your powerlessness? Now, part it's because that might be the only minion available.
Because if you want to say Kaddish three times a day,
well,
she lives on the Upper West Side where I live. I found myself in the same boat.
Los Angeles, I could possibly manage it, mostly by working in a Jewish organization.
But there were 9 other women there, and there were, it's painful. It is so painful for us to realize, how little has really progressed. Except to the fact that we can now openly talk about it, that the change we all believe that was in part, the ordination of women 30 years ago, right? In reality, structurally, professionally, in terms of our chevra, has changed us dramatically. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the work that has impacted the Jewish community at large, right, and the way in which we, what we have to think about in terms of the marketplace of Jewish life, we all we have are these painful reflections of us.
And I also feel like, living in the Kaddish issue, but I once had a family, it was involved the shul, started going to Chabad, one of these kind of stores. And the woman was Israeli, and definitely, her daughter was feminist, And I sort of had enough of a relationship with her that I flat out asked her, does this bother you? Right. And she basically said to me, I check my gender at the door. That really bothered me. you know, of course I can only understand so much being male, but you know, I sort of was the other end of this, like that there's people that have so much pain and so much, and all of this that we read. And then there are women and men, but you know, in this case, women who say,
look, the reality is that while we were here at seminary, I davened at Sinai Chapel, and likely will today. I enjoy that minyan. As I said, we've never been in a shul where I've been counted.
Right.
And 9 times out of 10, it doesn't bother me.
Right.
There are definitely moments it bothers me.
Right.
You know, it bothers me when people say stupid things.
Right.
It bothers.
You get the wrong occupation, honey.
That's not necessarily gendered.
Good point.
Okay. But there are, you know, there are times, and I will say, I've been in synagogues that are, they were fully egalitarian, and then you get the we'd never hire a woman rabbi.
Right.
And shuls, the shuls we've been in where I am respected as a rabbi, even though they don't count women in the minyan. So, you know, there's, I mean, it's not a black and white issue.
Okay, right.
But there are the things like you can't, you know, she says, you can't simply join the impromptu morning minyan of the LL Lounge at JFK. You know, when we went to Israel last summer, and we were getting up, we were saying, okay, let's say Shachri. So Sean got up, there was the bulkhead where it was convenient to daven. Sean got up and put his tefillin and tefillin and said Shachri, and it happens to be in front of, you know, a group of black hats sitting there. And I said, I think I'll put my tefillin on at Mincha, you know. I mean, there's,
yeah.
you're in a you're in a world community where it's not a choice necessarily to do things. I don't mind when I'm the only woman in tefillin in minyan, when I've chosen the minyan. But I don't always have the option to choose the minyan. And that becomes the issue. Like saying you can't do it on the Upper West Side, it's just not available. It should be. It's the Upper West Side of New York. But it's not.
It's not.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think Morris also has a point. The year that I was saying Kaddish, one of the things that I, you know, there were a number of occasions where I basically made my minyan.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I got asked to go do a presentation out at like UC Riverside. Don't ever drive from LA to Riverside. I brought along. I used to carry in my backpack those little. Mm-hmm. I had 10 of them because like, they don't weigh anything, right? And I just carried 10 of them all the time with Minchan Mariv in them.
That's true. That's
a group of some of you might have even been there. A group of us at the RA convention davened Mincha in Faneuil Hall so that I could say Mincha.
Right.
I will be eternally grateful for that. Right? But like. There were times when I just like sort of like at conferences and now to this day, right? Like I go to the AJS conference and there was one and people would put on, you know, like I need to say Kaddish.
Right.
And like I walk into that room, I go, okay, you're the rabbi. You know just how to do this. Happen. You step in, make sure this service happens, lead it so that this woman here can say Kaddish. That's part of my job now. It's just like, that's like, and you walk into the room and you do that.
If I hear someone, like, talking about the person, the men on the other side, rushing through Kaddish, and you do this also.
I wrap my voice.
Doesn't, you know, just start saying Kaddish loudly and slowly, and that's it. And if you don't like it, tough. You know, but it takes...
People respond.
I think certainly those of us sitting at the table, where it takes a certain attitude to become a rabbi, and we all have it on different levels. And, you know, we all are willing to stand up there and have people look at us and make judgments because they're going to, no matter where we are on the spectrum. But if you're that lay person, it's such a different experience if you don't have that person there to stand up for you, male, female, whatever.
Yeah, but Nessa should. I do, with all due respect, Nessa should have had the ability in certain regards. But you know, but it's a beautiful piece, and it really cuts you. But you know, the reason I came to the session is I'm saying Kaddish is here for me, and every time I've traveled, I make it a habit to make sure I go to shul, obviously. And I am intrigued, mostly in our conservative shuls, you know, at morning minyans more often because there's more to it, you know, so you have an opportunity to sort of witness more of the women who are present at morning minyans across the country and the men who are present. And, you know, there's more commonality of the women in every of those settings and more commonality of the men. You know, the men, if they go for, says, you know, it's a great way to start the morning, blah, 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 all these kind of things, all these kind of common. And for women, it's because of saying Kaddish. and you know, fewer women regulars over time,
right. mm-hmm.
but
right.
lots of women, well, not lots, but significant women in these congregations right. who are there because they're saying Kaddish. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really interesting phenomenon that, mm-hmm. you know, they all, when we were kids and we saw who were the millionaires, right. you know, who mm-hmm. went. So now we're that generation. They're just yes. a few years older yes. than us now. Uh-huh. And right. they're the millionaires.
Right.
But there are not as many women who are millionaires. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the women who are millionaires,
right.
they're a very special breed.
Right.
They're the first
Absolutely.
Generation. They're yep. the first generation of women
right.
millionaires.
That's right. Absolutely. So I guess to sum up, I think that you said it before, Morris, that in some ways... a lot of the challenges that Henrietta Szold was confronting when she wrote her piece still remain. In other ways, there have been many strides that we've taken, but a lot of the gendered issues remain the same. And of course, the Jewish world has been transformed in America. And so... the issue of where and how often and the calculations that go into a woman's commitment to say Kaddish three times a day are, you know, continue to be fraught in a way that that they just aren't for men. And that some of those issues, you know, you wonder even if they affect that kind of number disparity among the older millionaires, you know, that for women, that maybe it took so much more out of them to negotiate the saying of Kaddish that they're spent at the end of that year, whereas for men, if it was less fraught, maybe it became more of a, you know, special place that they wanted to continue as part of the routine of their lives. But I imagine there are other differences as well. So thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you.